Today's daf in the daf yomi is the Gemara in Shabbos, daf Kuf Chof Gimel. We are learning today Li'ili Nishmas Martha Boyarsky, Malka Bas Reb Shlomo, and also Jack Star Yaakov Ben Shlomo. All the Nishamas we learned for should have an Aliyah. We begin about 8-10 lines down with the words Itmar. It's right next to the Tosos Paga. The Gemara starts off and tells us Itmar, Reb Chiya Bar Abba, Amar Yochanan, Reb Chiya Bar Abba said in Yochanan. Karnus, that karnus that we talked about in the Mishnah that you're allowed to use to smash open the walnuts, the nuts, that's Shel Zahavim. That was the silversmith's shanino. That was the type of hammer that silversmiths use. They're not so particular about their hammers being used for something else, and therefore you're allowed to use it to crack open the nuts. Rav Shmon Bar Abba Omar, karnus, that karnus that we talked about was Shel Besomim, was the spice maker's hammer, shanino. That's the hammer that was talking about. Now, the two different opinions over here, one more machmir than the other. So, man, the Amad Bissom, in the second opinion, Rav Shmon Bar Abba, he says the spice maker's hammer you're allowed to use. So, certainly, Koshikain, the Zahavim, because the spice makers are even more particular about their hammer not being used for something else. And if they let you use it to crack open the walnuts, so then certainly the silversmiths would be happy to let you do this. The goldsmiths would be happy to let you do this. So, man, the Amad shows Zahavim, but the one that says the goldsmith, oh, only the goldsmith is willing to let other people use it. But avol de besamim, the spice makers kopit alayu. They would be makbit and not let people go and use it. Rashi says, "Hu uman, the uman isn't going to let you use this hammer shlo yislach lechu v'shlo yisakbu. So it shouldn't get destroyed or dirty in some way or get broken, and therefore he will not let you use it. But the goldsmith would, but the spice maker will not. That's the difference between these two opinions." We continue by quoting the Mishnah. It says, Vesakush, Vesakarka, Vahule. These were the sharp implements that are used in the weaving process. We said you can stick them into food and use them like as a toothpick. Tana Rabbanon, so the Brisa tells us, Paga, a paga is an unripened fig. Shetimana the tevin, that you put it inside straw. Rashi explains that they would put it inside the straw in order to allow it to get more mature, more ripened. The straw is muktza, the straw is normally used for building bricks, have a latit, Rashi says, and therefore they would put it inside the straw where it would be lehizvashel, it would go get mature and ripen. So this is being put into something that is muktza. Or alternatively, the charara, a piece of cake, shetimana b'gecholim, that you put inside the coals. Rashi explains, as can be seen in the Hagos HaBach over here in Os Aleph, he refers to Gemara in Erevin, this charara shetimina esmo b'gecholim, he put this dough, this piece of cake, into the coals yesterday, v'achshav kavu, and only now did they go out. So these coals are muktza, and again, you have your dough, you're now piece of cake inside this muktzah thing. So both of these two cases, the paga inside the tevin is something that is good, the paga inside something that's muktzah, or the charar, the piece of cake, inside something that's muktzah. So what should you do in this situation? You want to take it out. So in magula miktzah, so if part of it is visible on the top, so you'll have to pull on that, mutar l'taltula, and therefore there's no problem. Because any tiltle that's happening to the straw or to the coals is tiltle min atzad. That's not direct tiltle, and therefore there is no problem. So as long as you can pull out the paga, the unripened fig, now hopefully it's a little bit more ripened, and the charara, the piece of cake, and you're touching them, so the top part is exposed, so you're allowed to pull that out, and if the straw or the coals get moved, not a problem. However, in lav, if it's totally buried, if it's really hidden inside of it, so then also l'tatlo, you're not letting go and move the straw or move the coals to get to the good stuff inside of it. That's the opinion of the Tanakhama, this Brisa. Reloza ben Tadai Omer, Reloza ben Tadai says, Tolchavin bekush or b'charka. You can take our kush or our karka, that's the sharp implement over here that's used by the weavers. And you can stick it in there. You go and stab the food item over here, either the paga or the charara. And he says, Tochavim bekusho bekarkar, vehein minaros me'elehem. And then any of the muktzah straw or the muktzah coals, they fall off on their own. You're not doing the tiltu directly. This is also tiltu menatzad. That's what Beloza Batendai says, even though it's totally buried inside this, but you stab it with the sharp implement here, and you're not touching the dirt directly, and not the straw or the coals directly. Reb Nachman says, Halacha ki Rabbi Elozer ben Tadai. We paskin like this. Gemara says, really? Lemeimar, the sover of Nachman, tiltu min atzad lo shmei tiltu. So then you basically are saying that you hold the tiltu min atzad is not a problem. Does Reb Nachman really hold that? Well, Reb Nachman said elsewhere, Hai Pugla. A Pugla, Rashi tells us, is a radish. It's known. Now, this radish was already tolosh, it was already uprooted from the ground before Shabbos, and now you put it back in the ground on Shabbos. Shetminu ba'aretz, because you wanted it to either ripe more to stay fresh, then it's gala rosho, and you left the top part open so you can pull it right out of the ground. So there, Rav Nachman had said, this pugla that's up on the in the ground, but the top part is not in the ground, so as long as it's milamala limato, as long as you put it in with the wider part on the top and the narrower part on the bottom, shari, you can pull it out because you won't be moving any of the dirt because the top part is the widest part, so the dirt won't be moved. However, mimato limala, but if you put it in upside down, and this way the bottom part is now the wider part, so when you pull it out from the top part, you're going to be moving the dirt. The wider part is going to be pulled out afterwards, and it's going to move aside the dirt. Usser. So that's tiltum on that side, and Rav Nachman clearly says that that's usser. So we have a steer between Rav Nachman's comment saying that Allah is like Rav Elazar ben Tadoi, who says that it is mutter to do this. Tiltum on that side is okay. And here, where he says, Rav Nachman says beferish, that only if the widest part is on the top, so when you pull it out, nothing will be moved, it's allowed. But if the wider part is on the bottom, so then when you pull it out from its thinner, narrower top, so then it is going to move the dirt, and it's not allowed. So Gemara says, you're right, there's a steer over here. Rav Nachman's second statement over here, that the total on the side is a problem, he retracted. Why did we say he retracted this one and not the other one? Because halacha is like the other one, so Mistama, he retracted the one that's not la halacha. Then we quote the Mishnah where it says, Machat Shoyad, Lito Bo Coats, Vahule. We said that you're allowed to take the sower's needle, the hand needle that you use, to go and remove a splinter. So the Gemara asks, Shalach Le Rova Berei de Rava Le Rav Yosef. Rava, who is the son of Rabba, asked Rav Yosef the following Shaila. Yalam Dena Rabben said, Rabbi, teach us please. Machat Shinitel Charora. Now here, Charora doesn't mean what it meant before. Before, Charora meant a piece of cake, a piece of dough. Here, charora is the eye of the needle. Or uktsa, the other side, the pointy part of the needle, Rashi tells us. So the charora is the chur shala, is the hole, the eye of the needle. And the uktsa, Rashi tells us, is pointa, is the sharp part, the pointy part of the needle. So this needle that's missing one of these two normally critical parts to have in a needle. You need to have an eye of a needle so you can thread the needle, and you need to have a pointy part so it can go and sew. So this machat, this needle that lost either the eye of the needle or the pointy part of the needle, what is its status? Is it halachically it's still considered a kli or not? That's what he asked him. What is this status? Mahu. So Amalei, so Rav Yosef, his rabbi, tells him to Nisua. We learned in the Mishnah the following. Our Mishnah, machat shoyad, if you have this hand needle over here, you're allowed to use it for non-sewing purposes. You can't sew with it on Shabbos. But you're allowed to go lito bosa kos, to take out a splinter. That you're allowed to do with it. Now, why do we care when you're removing a splinter? If it has an eye to this needle or not, you're not threading anything with this needle, you're just using the pointy end over here. So therefore, if our Mishnah didn't qualify and say you must use it with a needle that has an eye to it, it didn't say anything, so it must be that it's still considered a kli, and you're allowed to go and move it. It's not a problem in this situation. Now, notice this doesn't mention anything about the point part. So it must be that even if the point part is removed, you still must be able to still remove a splinter. Maybe you won't be able to sew something real well, but Mistama, even if the pointy part is removed, it's still able to remove a splinter, so it's still considered a kli. So that's what Rav Yosef answered him. So where it says, wait a second, Esvei, he says, I don't understand that. Machat shenita charora uktsa tahora. But we have another Mishnah, this is a Mishnah in Kalim, where it talks about tum and tara, and it says that if the needle, this hand needle, lost either the eye of the needle or the point of the needle, then it's no longer considered a kli. How do we know that? Because it's tahora. If it had been tameh, it is now tar, because you broke it. Or if it wasn't tameh beforehand, but it's no longer going to be able to be mukshel kabel tuma, because it's not a kli. So you see that if it's missing either the pointy part or the eye of the needle, the charora or the uktsa, it's no longer a kli. So how can you, Rav Yossi, say it's still a kli? Amar Abaye. Abaye says, no, that's not a problem. Tuma a Shabbos karamis. You're trying to be a raya tuma to Shabbos. In regards to Ilchus tuma, it's not a kli, but in regards to Ilchus Shabbos, it is a kli. Why are the two mutually have to be the same? Why are they're not mutually contradictory? Tuma kli maisa beinan. The pasuk tells us that you have to have kli maisa. It has to be every type of a utensil has to be kli maisa. So if you don't have kli maisa, call kli maisa. So then, by definition, in regards to tuma and tara, it's not going to be able to be accepting tumah if it's not a kli ma'isa. In other words, has to be able to do the work that it was supposed to be. L'inyan Shabbos, however, midi d'chazei binan. In regards to Shabbos, you need to be able to use it on Shabbos. Lav davka does have to be used for the kli ma'isa that it was intended for. Can you use it on Shabbos? So then it's not muktzah. And this needle, whether it has an eye or not, whether it's as pointy as it should be for sewing or not, it still would be able to remove a splinter. So therefore, in regards to Shabbos, it's not Mokta, but in regards to Tumah V'Tara, it is considered no longer a Kli. But there's a problem with this. I'm a Rava. Rava says, I don't like your answer, by Manda Kamosiv, Shabbat Kamosiv. The original question that Rav Yosef had asked, the Eisvei that we brought down, that said it's Tahora, that is Tak a good question. There shouldn't be a difference between Tumah and Shabbos. Why is that? Midila inyan Tumah lab manu. If in regards to Hilchas Tumah, it's not considered a Kli, so then why don't we say the same thing? Linyan Shabbos, nami lab manu. We should say in regards to Hilchas Shabbos, it's also not considered a Kli in regards to Hilchas Shabbos. Either it's a Kli or it's not. If it's a Kli, so then you can move it on Shabbos and it accepts Tumah. But if it's not a Kli, so then it doesn't accept Tumah and you shouldn't be able to move it on Shabbos. Where it says, no, Rava, that's wrong. Meisvik. Machat. We just learned, machat bein nekuva, bein she'enu mekuva, if you have a needle, whether it has a hole in the needle, the eye of the needle, or whether it doesn't have the eye of the needle, so, mutul letaltul b'Shabbos. It says b'feirish in this brisa that you're allowed to move it on Shabbos. Then, what's the point of telling us it doesn't have the eye of the needle? V'lo amu nekuva, elin yin tumu b'vat. No, it's exactly telling us this point that Abaye had made, that how can you say tum and Shabbos go together? This Bryce is beferish saying exactly like Abaye said, that there's a difference between Tumah and there's a difference between Shabbos. In regards to Hilchus Shabbos, mutar l'taltal b'Shabbos, because you can still use it for some purpose. But in regards to Hilchus Tumah v'Tara, it's not considered a Kli, and it doesn't accept Tumah. So it seems like Rava has a Bryce that it goes against him, and Abaye is right. However, even though Rava doesn't answer, the Gemara tells us that Abaye answered. Abaye doesn't want to win a machlokis with Rava because Rava didn't think of an answer, and Abaye knows there's an answer. They want Torah Lamito. They want to know the true answer. So even though Rava himself was asked this question, and Rava doesn't come up with an answer, Abaye is more than willing to answer for Rava and not win, right? If Abaye doesn't answer this, he wins. But Abaye is not interested in winning. Abaye is interested in having the answer come to the correct conclusion. So therefore, Tirgum Abaye Aliba the Rava. Abaye answers up this teretz that they threw, this kasha that they threw at Rava with the following teretz. Begol me'askinan. This Bryce is talking about where the needle was never finished. It's an unfinished needle. That's a golem, right? A golem, we say in the vernacular, is the golem of the Marul Miprag, if that ever occurred or not. So it's a body. It's just a form without substance to it. So here we're talking about the needle was made in however they make needles, but it didn't yet have the eye put into it. So we're talking about this golme askinon. Rashi explains, they're waiting to have the eye of the needle put into them. The nekuva nigmur malachta, and when you put in the eye of the needle, that finishes it off. V'she'enu nekuva, until you go and put that hole in it, eino nigmur malachta. It's not done yet. Hilkach, Rashi explains, linyan tumahu to lo have a kli. In regards to Hilchus Tumah, it's not yet a finished utensil. In order to be a kli, you have to be finished. Avo betilto, but to use it, shaya, the chazi lekot, it still could be used, and that's the answer. Zimnim, the mimlach alayu umrashi lumona. Sometimes a person can change his mind and say, you know, Taka, I don't need this for sewing. I'm going to use this for splinters, and therefore I don't need to finish it off. Aval hecha, the nital charara uktza, but once it had already been finished, and then it lost its eye of the needle, or it lost its point, so Adam Zorkin Lerin Grutos, person throws it away, it's garbage now. Before you made it, you might change your mind, say, it's not garbage, I'm going to use it for this function. But if you made it to be a sewing needle, and then it breaks, the eye of the needle is broken, or the point is broken, that's called garbage, and you throw garbage away. And in that situation, you're right, there is no difference over here between Tumah and Shabbos. It's garbage. It's not a kli, and it's muktzah. But in a situation where you haven't yet made it, so then it's not considered a kli in regards to Hilchos Tumah V'Tara, but in regards to Hilchos Shabbos, it's still usable, and therefore it's not muktzah. So that's how Abaye answered for Rava the shaila that was asked on Rava's opinion. Gemara continues and tells us some other things Asuve Yenuka. What is Asuve Yenuka? So Rashi tells us, Lahachlik Seder Evarov. Kishu Nolad. Evarov Misparkin. Bitzorch Liyashvan. Sometimes when a baby is born, there's like a dislocation. There's actually a serious condition called the congenital dislocation of the hip. Sometimes babies are born with that, and they have to be put back into their proper place. Otherwise, it's a dislocation that could lead to a lot of problems. So this Isuve Yenuka, this straightening out the baby's limbs, so the machlokis over here is Rav Nachman says also you're not allowed to do this on Shabbos. It should be the word osir, it says on the side, not osir. Rav Shesh is shari. Rav Shesh says it's permissible to do this. Now obviously they're talking about that they didn't realize that this was potentially a serious problem, or that it wasn't a serious problem in those days, because otherwise for pikuach nefashos you'd be allowed to do this. So here it was a problem, so Rav Nachman said it's not a serious enough problem that you're allowed to do something about it. And therefore, this is like Masakin Mona, Rashi says. You're not allowed to do this because the Domila Masakin. It looks like you're fixing the kid. And you're not allowed to do this. Rav Shesh says, no, you are allowed to do that. I'm Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman says, where do I get the idea that you're not allowed to do this? It's Masakin Mona. You're not allowed to fix this child by straightening out his limbs. It's not. He says, there's a Mishnah that tells us as follows. This Mishnah, we're going to learn, it's later in the Masechta, comes later in the Masechta, on Daf Kufnem Zayin, and it tells us there, ain't os apiktosin. You're not allowed to go make an emetic. An emetic is something that causes you to throw up. So you're not allowed to take this apiktosin b'Shabbos, on Shabbos. Rashi explains, lahaki, it's made to make you throw up. Shosa mashkim umeki. You drink this apiktosin, we have liquids, ifpakak, and things like that make a person throw up. Velola refuah, but it's not done for medicinal purposes. It was done for strange purposes. El loharik is made of to empty out your stomach. Shiyuch alecho v'lishtos hayom harbe. In order that you should be able to eat more. So you enjoyed the food, and now you throw it up so you can eat more. So your stomach's empty. Ketamina perichovis. As we'll learn over there, even though we don't say that you can't drink this apiktos because it's medicinal, here it's not medicinal. Nevertheless, also mishum de masakin gavra. The reason why you can't have this apiktosin, that it literally apiktos means apiktosin, that it throws you out the food that's inside of you. So it's an emetic. So you're not allowed to have this apiktosin, not because medicinal purposes, but because it's masaking the person. It makes you now eligible, so to say, to eat. Before you weren't eligible to eat, now you are. So that's what he says. Just like you can't use apiktosin on Shabbos, that's why he said that you're not allowed to take over here to straighten out the limbs of the baby. It's masaking the baby. Rav Shesh disagrees. Hossam, he says, lav urche. It's not normal for a person to go and take this emetic. That's not normal. However, hocha urche, but by the baby, this is natural. Rashi says, "Varehu kimi shemachilo umashkeu." This is no different than feeding the baby and giving the baby to drink. So you're allowed to do this. So this is the machlokus over here between Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshes. Rav Sheshes, mino amino lo. Where do I know that I'm right? That you're allowed to go and straighten out the limbs of this baby? That not? Because we learned in our very Mishnah here, machat shuyad lito basakot. You're allowed to take this hand needle over here and use it to remove a splinter. So you see that you're fixing the person, you're removing the splinter, and yet it's not a problem with masaking. So therefore, I'm showing you from our Mishnah that I'm right. Rav Nachman says, not so fast. That's not a good proof. Rav Nachman, hasam kapit. When you have a splinter, that's not something that's part of you. You're not fixing something. You're removing something that is external to you. Rashi says, hakot hazeh, this needle, this splinter rather, eino mechubibo, it's not really connected to you. Elamufkad, it's deposited in you. V'nosin shom v'otzazu enu tikkun. You're not fixing something. You're not supposed to have this. So it's not being fixed. You're not straightening something out that belongs here. However, by the baby's limbs, hachalo pocket, Rashi says, v'domi l'mlocho shemisadron u'machnisa l'mokum chibor. You're putting the dislocated limb back into its proper location. And that is something that is fixing something that was broken. So that you're not allowed to do. As opposed to the splinter, that's external. And that's why Rav Nachman says, you're not allowed to go and fix this child. Again, if this is considered by them not to be a serious situation, so then you wouldn't be allowed to do this. Again, if it's at all pikuach nefashos, everybody would say, of course, that you're allowed to do this. Next Mishnah. Konishal Zaysim, if you have a stick, Rashi explains this Konishal Zaysim is after you go and put all the olives together in a vat, so Tzover B'maito, and you put them inside this vat, B'shamno Mis'asef B'sochon, and the oil inside this these olives, it rises, so to say, the noach lotzis, it's ready to go out. The eshlo kanan, they would take this stick, la hafchon bo, to stir the olives over here. The livdok im kamu kol tzorcho, and they would go and check, as we'll see in a moment, via this stick to see if the olives were mature, if the oil that had seeped out is mature, and this therefore the olives are ready to be pressed. And it's time to bring them to the beis habad. So this stick, this konish ozesim, was used to turn over the olives to go and check to see if they were ripe enough, the oil was mature enough, ready to be pressed. So the Mishnah tells us, im yesh kesha berosho, if it has a knot on its end, ke'en pekak shel kona, coolness. So Rashi says it's like some sort of a knot. It's on the end of it that we'll see has a base kibble to it. So this knot can collect a little bit of the oil in it. So if it does have imesh kesha brosho makabel tuma, so then it's a kli because it now is a base kibble. Otherwise, it was a pshute kliates. This was a stick. A stick isn't makabel tuma. It doesn't have a base kibble. But here, if you put this pekak on it, if you put this rosh kesher on it, so then it's makabel tuma because now it has a base kibble. V'imlav ein makabel tuma, but if it doesn't have this pekak on it, it doesn't have this kasher berosho on it, so then it's not makabel tuma because it doesn't have a base kibble and it's pshutei kliyetz and it's not makabel tuma. But whether it has the kasher or not on the head, ben kach u ben kach nito b'shabbos, you're allowed to use it on Shabbos because it has a function to turn the olives on Shabbos. You're allowed to do that to see if they're ripened. That you're allowed to do. So therefore, it has a purpose. It's considered a utensil, and it's not muktzah. Gemara says, "Amai, how come pshutei kliyetzu upshutei kliyetz ain't a makabel tuma?" So if it's a pshutei kliyetz, it should be makabel tuma. So my time, how come our Mishnah says that it is makabel tuma if it has this kesher? The my time is really asking over here, why is it not makabel tuma if it doesn't have this kesher? Dumya the sakbina, it has to normally have something like a sock, just like a sock has a base kibble, it accepts something inside of it. It's a holder for a receptacle for something. So too, the wood is only makabel tuma if it has this receptacle. So how come this konish ozesim, which doesn't have a receptacle, it's considered makabel tuma if it has this kesher berosho? So Tana Mishmei the Rav Nechemia. So this Amora who learned the brises in front of Nechemia said this brisa, b'shor shemahafik b'zesim, at the time that you're overturning the olives over here with this stick, so you go see this kesher, you'll see a little bit of oil that's left over there. It has a base kibble, as I already pointed out, and therefore you're checking to see this oil, is it mature, is it not mature, and therefore that's why it's makabel tuma if it has this kesher berosho, because it now has a base kibble. Otherwise, you're right, without the kesher berosho, it's a pshutei kliyetz, and it's not makabel tuma. Next Mishnah. Rav Yossi Omer, some aren't goris over here, the words Rav Yossi Omer, you see on the side, the Mishnah Mishnais, we're not goris this. In any event, we're goris this over here, we'll learn it. So Rav Yossi Omer, Rav Yossi says, Kol HaKelim Nitolim, all utensils are allowed to be moved on Shabbos. We'll see in a moment what this is all talking about. With the exception, Chutz Min HaMatzor HaGodo, with a very, very large type of a plane, a saw, Rashi says. He says that this Masor Gedola is a Magiro Gedola. It's a very large plane, a very large saw. Shasuya Liktos Koros, and it's used to cut down beams, to cut beams to the appropriate size. So that's Muktzah on Shabbos, no matter what. Even after this whole discussion, we'll see that retained its Muktzah status because it's a very heavy clean. You wouldn't use it for anything else, and therefore it's Muktzah because you can't cut these beams on Shabbos. And likewise, the Yosed Shal Macharesha, this very, very heavy plow. It's known as a coulter. Rashi uses that word, actually, coultera, in a foreign language word, which is an English word as well, C-O-U-L-T-E-R. And this is a very, very big plow, and it's used over here specifically for plowing, and nobody wants to use it for anything else. They're meyached it for this purpose, and the lochazum lochacheris, it doesn't have any other purpose. So therefore, these types of kalim, this maser godol, or this yotzei shemacharesha, they remain muktzah, even though all other kalim are not muktzah. Now, what are we talking about? So we're going to see in the Gemara that there was a time in the beginning of the Bayis Sheni when Ezra and Nehemiah were the leaders of Chai Yisos, and there were many people that unfortunately were not the Shomer Shabbos. They weren't doing things right. They had degraded their spirituality to a significant degree. So in order to prevent people from doing malachos that they were doing, so they inserted many additional restrictions over here, specifically making kalim muktzah. And as people became more observant, they retracted some of their gezeros, and that's why our Mishnah is saying over here now that at the end, all the kelim they put back to their original place that they were allowed to be used on Shabbos, with the exception of these, that they still retain the additional status of not being allowed to be moved on Shabbos, they were motza. And that's what the Gemara is now going to tell us. Amar Rav Nachman. Hay uchlo de katzore. This uchlo de katzore, Rashi says, this is a kli nechoshes, also kinapa. It's some sort of a brass or bronze utensil over here that had, like a sieve, had lots of holes in it. And Bushel Kofsin, this was used by the launderers. Vinos Noala Begodin, they would put it on top of the clothing. Umizalef Bo Hamayim Aleim, they would sprinkle water on top of it, and the water would go through these holes. Others say that they use this for incense. Yeshu Menshe Megamrin Mugmor Mitachtov, that this was used to burn incense underneath it, and the incense would go up through the holes, the smell would go up through those. Vagodim Unochim Alov, Umizgamrin Derech Hanekovim. And they would get a nice aroma to them through the holes in this type of a kli. So this type of a kli as well was only a very specialized kli that was similar to the two types of kelim that we talked about in the Mishnah that were still muktzah. Rabbeinu Chananel has a different gears over here. He has the gears which is also brought down on the side in the Aruch of Uvla. And this Uvla, Rabbeinu Chananel says, was some sort of a rock. Rabbeinu Chananel says, Evan Gedola, Shinot Sein HaKoves Aleha. He would put it on top of, let's say, the curtain or whatever he was cleaning, Hayiria, Shirot Zilalavna, and he would want to go and clean it. So they would put this rock on it to pound it. He, Shiruya B'mayim, would be in water, Umaka Lov Missouri, and he would use this thing to go and smash it to get the dirt out. They would do this multiple times to clean it. Okay, that's this Uchla de Katsri. Whatever it exactly is, different opinions. That has a din of it has the same din as in our Mishnah, these utensils that are absolutely muksa, even after all of these retractions of these gezeros. Amar Abaye, Abaye added, and he said, Charba de Ushkofi. Rashi says this is the sakin shel ratzon. And this, the person who works with leather, the tanner's knife that he would cut the leather with. And the sakina de ashkafta, Rashi explains this is the sakin that the butchers would use to cut the meat. Tosus doesn't like this. Tosus says this was the shchita knife that they would use. They were mapkid, that it shouldn't get any pagam in it. So these things also are like the kalim in the Mishnah that it says you're not allowed to use them. And one more before we get to the kiyosei shemach reshes domi, before we state that, we said also the chatzina de nagri. This is a certain type of kli also that carpenters, the nagri, would use to mistama cut the wood. It was some sort of a sharp implement, and these were only used for very specialized purposes. The owners were makbid. This is like muktzah machmas chisor and kis. They were not wanting this to be used for anything else. So in all of these situations, kiyosei shamacharesha domi. So these three additional utensils are like the two utensils in the Mishnah that a person is considered, they're muktzah, and a person is not allowed to use them on Shabbos. Now, where does this all come from? Why is the Mishnah telling us that only these two, these extra three that the Gemara tells us, all of the utensils can be moved except for these utensils? So Gemara starts off and tells us, Tana Rabban, we learn a Braisa. Barishona, originally means during the time of Nehemiah ben Chachilaya, when Ezra and Nehemiah saw that the people were not doing what they were supposed to do on Shabbos, they were Mechal Shabbos, and he instituted these very Xeris and then retracted them slowly, slowly, slowly as the people became better. So Barishona, they originally said, Hayu Omrim Shlosho Kalim Nitolim Shabbos. There were only three tools that you were allowed to go and carry on Shabbos. Tosus points out that we're dealing obviously over here with Kalim that didn't have a base kibble. The Lav B'nei Kibble, like cups and plates and things like that, that was never included in the original Gezerah that you can't use them on Shabbos. But here we're talking about things that weren't necessary for eating. So therefore, Barishona Yomim Shlosha Kalim Tolim Shabbos. Only three utensils were allowed to be used on Shabbos that didn't have the base kibble, that weren't regular food utensils, because the people would be Mechal Shabbos, so they instituted a lot of restrictions. So these three, even at the beginning, they never instituted. The Mektsoa Shotvela, this was a knife that was used to cut the pressed figs, the Kikar Tvela. Rashi explains over here that this is Izemel Shemechatkin Bo Tvela. This is a knife that you cut the figs. And Tosos has a similar idea. Lochoshev Elekalim, the Lav B'nei Kibble. It's, again, this is where I got it from, this Tosos, that says it's Pshita, the Kosa Sukaros, Utsluchios, Haimutavna. They never instituted it. You couldn't carry the plates and the cups and the glasses and things like that. So here, this knife, so they you might have thought that they instituted the gzeira on that. So even at the beginning, they never instituted it for this mitzvah shel dvela, to cut the pressed figs. V'zua melisterin shel kidera. This was something like, Rashi says, kaf gedola, which is a large ladle, and they would go and remove the schmutz on the top of the soup, or whatever it was, they would remove it this ladle. That you're allowed to do. Person ever makes a soup, so it gets this foam on the top of the soup, so you'll have to take that away with this ladle. That was also not included in the original gezeras that they meant to institute to prevent people from Mechal Shabbos. That's a zuam alistar and shul kedera. And finally, the third one, there are three, these utensils, the sakin kitana shagabi yashulcha, and the knife on the table. So Rashi says, shechot belech lebatzer, that they would normally cut the meat and the bread with, and other foods. The hani tadir mitashrish, these were so essential and necessary, so they never instituted any gezera on them. Once the people started getting a little bit more Shomer Shabbos, hitiru, they allowed additional utensils to be used. V'chazu v'hitiru, and they got better, they allowed even more utensils to be used. V'chazu v'hitiru, and then they allowed even more utensils to be used, until ultimately, atcha amru, finally people, Baruch Hashem, Shomer Shabbos, so Nehemiah and Ezra, they stopped these decrees in total, and atcha amru, until they said, Kala Kalim and Tolim Shabbos, you're allowed to use any utensil in Shabbos, as long as the utensil is not muktza, except for those things that are like muktza, machlan, sitzar, and kiss, that you're so makbid on them, they're so big, you wouldn't use them for anything else. Chutz min meisa agado, v'yotze shamach resha, like our Mishnah told us. So our Mishnah is telling us, after all the gzeras from Nehemiah were retracted, that's the bottom line where they were left with. Now, the Gemara, I already explained to you what the Gemara says. The Gemara is asking, my hitiru, what does it mean that they gave a heter? Then v'chaz v'hitiru, they gave another heter. V'chaz v'hitiru, gave another heter. So we'll have two versions over here, Abaya and Rava. We'll paskin like Rava, as we usually do when it's not one of the yal kigam, the six things that we paskin like Abaya. And we'll see that the halacha is like Rava and will be familiar to us. In any event, Abaya says, I'm Abaya, hitiru, the first thing that they were matir was dovr shemalachtu leheter, after they put in all these restrictions and said you can't use any kelim except those three, so then they started to be a little bit more meiko and the people started to be more Shomer Shabbos. So they allowed you to go and move dovo shemalachtu leheter, something that's purpose is not iser, the purpose is heter, l'tzorach gufo, to use it for whatever you needed to use it for that type of a work. So for example, if you had something that didn't involve any iser and it was a kli shemalachtu leheter, you're allowed to do that item, that action on Shabbos, so they allowed you, they matted it. Originally, they put in restrictions on it, but now they matted you to allow you to pick up that kli. It wasn't muktza. That was the first hitiru. The chazur hitiru, the second hitiru, according to Abaye, is dovish malach leheter. Again, this kli that was malach leheter, letzorach mekomo. They now allowed you to move it, not only to do its function with it. Let's say this was a kli that you're allowed to, it's a butter knife, so you're allowed to go butter the knife, use a butter knife, it's not a problem. So they allowed you to use this butter knife. That was the first heter, letzorach gufo, to go butter with this butter knife. And then they allowed you to go and move it if you needed the place where the butter knife was. You wanted to put the tablecloth down, so you're allowed to remove the butter knife. It's a kli shemalach leheter, and now you're allowed to move it, letzorach mekomo, because you needed its place. Then the third one, v'chazu v'tiru, dov shemalach leheter, then they allowed you to take something that normally is a malach leheter, let's say like a hammer to bang your nails, and they allowed you to use it, letzorach gufo. If you needed it to go and smash open walnuts, they allowed you to do it. However, letzorach gufo only, they allowed you to use it for letzorach gufo, letzorach mekomo, lo. But if you needed the place where the hammer was, that they didn't allow you to move it. That's according to Abaye. And finally, v'adayim b'yodo achas, and they only let you do all of these things if you could move this kli with one hand, then you're allowed to do this. But with two hands, you weren't allowed to. Until finally, the people, Baruch Hashem, became so much more Shomer Shabbos, Hashomer, now, kala kelim nitolim b'shabbos. You're allowed to move all of these utensils on Shabbos, afilu b'shtei yodayim, even with two hands. But only still, a kli shemalachtu leheter, letzorach gufo lemekomo, and only a kli that was malachtu lusa, only letzorach gufo, but not letzorach mekomo. That's not the halacha, but that's what Abaye said. Amalei Rava, Rava says, doesn't make any sense. Michte, hitiruk tani, it says they permitted something that implies that it really was also beforehand. Mali letzorach gufo, mali letzorach mekomo. If it's a kli shemalachtu leheter, it's a butter knife. So why would it make any difference that they should allow you to use it to butter the roll or to move it because you need that place? So the first hitiru doesn't make any sense. You should say it should only be letzorach gufo, and the second chazur hitiru should be letzorach mekomo. So Rava says the first hitiru. The first hitiru was they allowed you to use something like a butter knife that's malachtu leheter, whether you needed it for the buttering of the butter knife, using the butter knife, or you needed the place. So the first Hitiru was for both of them, Tzorach Guf and Tzorach Makomo. Because of Hitiru, the second time, Mecham Letzel, they allowed you now even to move it for its own good. The knife over here is sitting out in the sun. It's going to get ruined if it sits out in the sun. It's going to discolor, whatever. So they allowed you to move it for its own benefit. You're not using Letzorach Guf or Makomo, but it's just for the benefit of that kli. That's what Because of Hitiru was allowing you to do. And then, because of Yitiru, they allowed even more. Davishim allowed to listen. Now they allowed you to take this hammer that's normally used l'isser to bang your nails, and they said l'tzorach gufo u'l'tzorach makomo in. You're allowed to use it to go and bang the walnuts open, or if you need its place, you can move it so you can use that place. So l'tzorach gufo l'tzorach makomo, even a klishim allowed to l'isser they allowed you to use, which is the halacha. However, that's in, that they allowed you to use, however, mechamel itself low. But if this hammer is in the sun, and this hammer is normally used for banging in nails, so it's a klisha lafta le'isser, so you're only allowed to use it, tzorach guf l'makomo, but you wouldn't be allowed to go and use it for moving it mechamel itself, to protect it, to benefit the kli, that you're not allowed to do. And vadayin, this is also allowed only b'odim echad, in b'shnei b'nei odim lo, only for small utensils, but not something that required to be picked up by two people. Until finally, the people, Baruch Hashem, are so much better. Asher Amru, call a kelim mitolim b'shabbos. Every type of these kelim that we talked about, klishim alaf t'lisser, klishim alaf t'lheter, can be moved, afilu b'shnei b'nei odim, even if it's a large utensil, as long as it's a klishim alaf t'lheter, or klishim alaf t'lisser, and using it only l'tzorach guf makomo, klishim alaf t'lheter can be l'tzorach guf makomo, or even mechamo l'tzel, that's what Rava says you're allowed to do. That's what ultimately they said you can do. Mara says, wait a second, Esvei Abaya, Abaya, ask on Rava. He says, Meducha, we had this previously, this mortar, that's the item, you take the pestle and you chop up garlic, shum, in this mortar. So we said, Im yesh bo shum, if there's still garlic inside this Meducha, so then Metatlan, so you're allowed to move it. But we said, Vim lav, ein Metatlan, but if not, ein Metatlan also, you're not allowed to go and move it. So how come? It must be that you're not allowed to move it if you need its place. Exactly like I said, Abaya, but not like you said, Rava. You said you're allowed to move it. Letzorach makomo. So Rava answers, Hochav Ma'eskin. You know, we're talking about Mecham Letzel. No, this is a Klishim Lachto Le'isser. You're only allowed to move it, Letzorach Guva makomo, but you're not allowed to move it, Mecham Letzel. And therefore, this is talking about Mecham Letzel. That's why it's not a problem to me, because I agree, you're not allowed to move it, Mecham Letzel, to protect it. You don't want it to get in the sun and discolor or get ruined in the sun. Or whatever it may be damaged over here, so that you're not allowed to do for the benefit of the kli. But Tzorach Guf Makomo, Rava says you're allowed. He asks another question on Rava Vishavin, but both Basil and Mishamer, we had this again previously, said, Shim Kitziv Alav Basar, once you chopped on this Meducha, you chopped on it the Basar on Yantif, Shasal Tatlo, that you're not allowed to go and move it anymore. So how come? It seems to be saying that you're allowed to move it according to Yulitzorach Gufa Makomo, but here it says, even Beis Hillel says you're not allowed to move it. So again, Rava says the same tarot. Tzorchanami, Mecham Letzel. When they say that both Beis Hillel and Misham say you're not allowed to move it, it's only talking about Mecham Letzel for its own protection. But Letzorach Gufa and Tzorach Makomo, they would allow you to move it. At least Beis Hillel would, and that's how Rava says, is how we pass it. Now, what are we talking about? So I already explained this, but here the Gemara says, Amar Rechanina, Bimei Nechemya ben Chachilaya, when Nechemya at the beginning of the Bayisheni was coming back from Babel with Ezra, Nishdesh Mishnazu, that's when this Mishnah was originally taught, because it says over there, it's brought down in Nechemya, right, in our understanding, we don't have a Sefer Nechemya, it's really all Sefer Ezra. Ezra Nechemya is one Sefer, but in the vernacular, we refer to this as Ezra and Nechemiah, two different Svarim, but in the Chav Dalet Svarim, it's all considered Ezra. In any event, in the Sefer that we call in the vernacular Nechemiah, it says over there in Perek Gimel, Bimei Nechemiah Machilai Nishnis Mishnazo, because the Chsev, it says in the Pasuk, Bayomim Mahema, in those days, Ro'isi B'Yehuda, they saw that the Jews living in Yehuda, they were coming back to Eretz Yisrael, Dorchim Gitos B'Shabbos, they were pressing their wine on Shabbos, Umevin Aremos, and they would bring in the piles of the growths, of the grains from the field, and therefore there was tremendous chilul Shabbos. So, as is the general rule, when people are mechal Shabbos, you don't make it looser, you make it tighter, and therefore you put in safeguards to protect the Shabbos, and that's what happened over here too. But subsequently, these were only instituted for a short period of time, they weren't permanent gzeros, and as they saw that Baruch Hashem, the people were becoming better and shomer Shabbos more, so they retracted some of their gzeros. Until the end point they came, this Mishnah, they said they retracted everything except the Neser HaGadol and the Yosei Shalmach Reisha. Amar Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar says, Konin umaklos, glustra umedocha, these four things that the Tanaim talked about, all of them, kulan kodem hataras kelim nishnu. They were all taught before this Mishnah. In other words, each of them had an aspect of the gezeira that was involved originally at the time of Nehemiah, and they were all before. They were all these things that say that they're also to do were all earlier on, and they were subsequently retracted. What are these four things? So Gemara says, konin. What are these konin? These tubes, these reeds. So dithnan, these are metal poles that they used for the lechab aparim. So it says dithnan lo sidur hakonin lo nitilosin dochas shabbos, that you weren't allowed to go and arrange the konim, which the lechem aparim were 12 breads, and they were arranged in columns, two columns with six breads, one on top of the other. Now they were up there the entire week. They put them up there on Shabbos, and they removed them on the following Shabbos. So they were up there the entire week. They baked them on Friday, and they would keep them fresh through a miracle, and they would be taken down the following Shabbos, 8 days later. If it was a Yom Tov on a Friday, it would be 9 days later. If it was a Rosh Hashanah Thursday, Friday, it would be 10 days later. So this was a tremendous nace that occurred. And in order that they should stay fresh, so you have to do your shtadlus, they would put these konin, these poles, these tubes, in between the rows of the breads, so that they wouldn't directly touch each other. That would cause them to have a little air circulating in between them, and they would stay fresh. So therefore, the arrangement of these konim, these sidur konim, or the removal when you took them off on Shabbos, so this wasn't docha Shabbos. You weren't allowed to do this on Shabbos. Tosus points out, this is a shvus, this is the derabbanan, and we normally have a rule, ain shvus b'mikdash, so he says, no, there are exceptions to this rule. This is one of the exceptions to the rule. What are maklos? So this was the way that they had when Erev Pesach, they had so many korbanos Pesach, so they would put out these poles that would go. They didn't have enough hooks, the normal hooks that they had in the Beis HaMikdash, to sacrifice all the korbanos Pesach. So, the Mishnah tells us one time there were 600,000 korbanos Pesach that were brought, and a tremendous amount of korban Pesachs that were brought on Erev Pesach, so therefore they would not have enough hooks to go and put them on to flay them, so they would put these poles on one person's shoulder to another person's shoulder. They would hang the korban Pesach from those poles, and then they would flay them. So the Mishnah tells us that not. Maklos, dakin, chalokin, yisham. They had these very thin poles, and they would use them. They were smooth. You'd put it on your shoulder and your friend's shoulder in front of you. And v'tola, they would hang the korban Pesach from these poles, u'mavshin, and they would be able to flay it. And that was on a regular Erev Pesach. It was a chol, a weekday. And along comes Rabbi Elazar. It should be Rabbi Elazar Omer. We have the gears of Omer, Rabbi Elazar. But Rabbi Elazar Omer, he says an additional statement. When you have Omer, it means he's going back on the previous statement to argue with it. Rabbi Elazar Omer has a new statement. He says, our boss or Shechol Yos B'Shabbos, when Erev Pesach was on Shabbos, Meniach, in this situation, you go take Yodo, Akosiv Chavero, V'yad Chavero, Akseva. We turn to the Omer Aleph. You would put your hand on the person in front of you and not take these poles, because these poles were Muktzah. And you would go and hang the Korban Pesach on your arm that you were holding on to the other person's shoulder in front of you and flay it in that way. In other words, in both of these two cases, they instituted gezeira over here that you weren't allowed to use the poles either for the lechem aponim to put them on or take them off, or for the Korban Pesach when Erev Pesach was on Shabbos. So that's the second. This gezeira was an early gezeira before they changed their mind, so to say, before they retracted all of these original gezeiras that they did. Glustera, what's glustera? That is the tnan. Learn in the Mishnah, Nagor, this is some sort of a bolt. Sheesh Barosho, glustera. This is some sort of a chain like that they used to use to bolt their doors. And this bolt over here, which was the actual thing that we put into the ground to bolt the door in place, so it had on it sometimes a flat part that they could use to chop stuff or to use it as some sort of a kli. So this glustera, so it says, if it had this flat part on the top, Rabbi Shomer, Shomta min Pesach zeh, v'tola b'chaveh, Rabbi Shabbos. You'd be allowed to remove it from this door and go bring it to another door on Shabbos, because that has the status of being a kli, because they could use it to chop. And Rabbi Tavron Omer, harei you could call a kelim, u'metalta b'chotzer. He says, you'd be allowed to go and move this. It's like a regular keli, and you're allowed to go and move it, no problem. So Rav Yeshua said you had to do it shomta, you had to do it in a dragging sort of a way. Rashi says you couldn't carry it in the normal way. And Rabbi Tarpin says you could carry it in the normal way. So that's the third example over here of something that they instituted a decree for. Well, the meducha is what we said, that you weren't allowed to go move the meducha. We said, Rashi brings down, Apogad Dishniya Rava Leel Mechamel Itzel. Even though Rava had said before, he was talking about the opinion that you're not allowed to move it Mechamel Itzel, but Bayishniya Litzorch Makomo, he says you weren't allowed to move, you were allowed to use it Litzorch Kufa, but not Litzorch Makomo. So here, this is Shinuya Dechika Ninhu. Those are a little bit forced answers. And Lekol Mataris Kalim Nishnu. So the simple answer is say no. This was a gzera that the Nehemiah made before they ultimately retracted it. So these four things are also included in those original gezeros that Nehemiah had made. Amar Rabba said, we might, not necessarily so. Dilma, you can in fact say that all of them were later, and in fact, all of them are still extant. All of these were actually after they re-permitted to use Kalim, but these were all exceptions to the rules. Why? Kanim, time of mind. Why couldn't you use the Kanim to be Mesader, the Lechem upon him? On the shulchan or to take it off. So Gemara says, Mishum Yafushe, the whole reason that you did this was that the bread shouldn't be lying one on top of the other for all 7 days. But here, Bahai Purta, with this little time, if you're going to do this on Shabbos, Lo Miyafish, it's not going to spoil. So therefore, even after they said that you're allowed to use Kalim, this there was no reason to allow, so therefore this retained its status of being Muktza, not being allowed to be moved. Likewise, the Machlos, why were you not allowed to use the poles for the Korban Pesach? Because after Korban Pesach, you had another teretz. You could put your arm out on top of the other person. So why use something that's potentially muktza if you don't have to? Glustra, that's Kidrav Yane. Why weren't you allowed to use this glustra? You had to drag it according to the opinion of Rav Yoshua? Because he holds like Rav Yane. The Rav Yane, the Chotz Hashenu Morevitz Eskin, we're talking about where it didn't have an Erev. And when you don't have an Erev, you're not allowed to move from Meshus HaYochid to this Chotzer. So even though the rice you're allowed to, the rabbi said, no, you can't. So here we're talking about Chotz Hashenu Morevitz Eskina. And the machlokas between Rabbi Yeshua and the opinion of Rabbi Tarfon is as follows. Rabbi Yeshua Savar Tolcha Pesach Kilifnim Domi. He said that the Pesach, where you're going to put this bolt, this Nagar, is like inside. So it's moving it from the yard inside. Therefore, you're not allowed to do it. Lekomotat Demonu Debotim B'Chotzer. And you're moving a house item into the chotzer, and it wasn't a chotzer murevis. You're not allowed to do this. But Rabbi Tarfon Savar Tocha Pesach Kil Chutzdami. As opposed to the opinion of Rabbi Tarfon, he said that no, this bolt over here is like it's in the chotzer already. If it's in the chotzer, you're allowed to move within the chotzer. The Eruv Chatzeris isn't for the moving of things in the chotzer. That's Rishus HaYochid. But it's the rabbis who said, we're concerned if you move from your house into the chotzer, you're going to move from your house into Rishus HaRabim. And therefore, in this situation, the rabbi said, we have to institute a gzeira. And that's only if it's from the house to the chutzah. Rabbi Tarfon says, you're not moving from the house to the chutzah, therefore there's no problem. And finally, the fourth and final thing, the meducha, that's also easy to explain. This is even after they retracted all the other gzeros, because this is not the opinion of the Chachamim. This is Rav Nechemihi, who said that you're only allowed to move a kli shemalachto leheter for that actual heter item itself. And the only reason they allowed to use the ali, the medocha, over here on yontif was for simchas yontif. But once you used it, so you can't move it at all, because you're not allowed to move it. This kli is only allowed to be used, the tzorch gufo, for that type of gufo, according to Rav Nechemihi, that you're allowed to use it for, but for nothing else. With that, we conclude today's share.